Hi, I'm Janelle.
And I'm Monique.
And welcome to Is Marriage Worth It?
We are just two single chicks, girls, women.
Anything but females.
Trying to figure out what marriage is like and is it worth it?
I'm assuming the best place to get the answers is from married people. Maybe engaged people, newlyweds, and even other singles.
Each episode, we will have a guest answering different questions we have or that you may have about marriage.
Join us as we try to figure out, is marriage worth it?
I wonder if my future husband or yours is listening right now. Hi, I'm Monique.
And I'm Janelle.
And welcome back to another episode of
Is Marriage Worth It? This week, we have my very good friend, Dan, joining us as our guest. Thank you, Dan.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yes, Dan and I, while we haven't known each other for years and years, we are very good friends. And he graciously appreciated, after I bugged him for a couple months, to do our podcast. So, Dan,
I think
why
it took
you...
a little bit, but I think. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to ask you to tell us a little bit about yourself.
So, Janelle, you and I have worked together for a handful of months now. I think the first time that we met, I told you we were going to be best friends. And you said, slow your roll. Let's see if that actually happens. And I bugged you enough to make it actually happen. So you're more than welcome to bug me back to be on your podcast. I don't have a traditional story. So I think it's going to be an interesting conversation today as we go through some of the questions and kind of the conversation that we have for your podcast. I've been kind of all over the place in terms of jobs and relationships and even where I've lived. So it's sometimes fun unraveling a little bit about that and sometimes a little awkward. So here we go.
So this is a marriage and relationship podcast. So why don't you tell us about your relationship status as of right now?
So legally, I am still married. However, we are very much separated. I grew up in a very conservative household. I think, Janelle, you and I were talking the other day about, I don't even know if my dad was a pastor or not, but either way, it felt like it. We were at church every time the doors were open. Definitely knew how I was supposed to act and how I was supposed to behave, but I also knew very, very early on that there was something a little bit different about me. I knew that I was gay. I knew that I was definitely attracted to the same sex, but in the world that I grew up in, it wasn't allowed. And even more so in the home that I grew up in, we just didn't talk about it. So it was kind of an interesting way to feel like I was trapped and I didn't have the option. So I grew up very much knowing that there was the expectation that I had to be one way and act one way and live my life. So I grew up, graduated high school, went to college, and I met a girl. We dated and we got married. I knew it was awkward. I knew it was weird. I knew that I wasn't completely attracted to her. And in the back of my mind, there was always guilt for that. But I also knew, based on how I was raised, that that's normal, or at least I thought that that was normal. So it took quite a while to kind of come to terms with that, come to grips with that. In the beginning of that marriage, we also had a kid. So I have an 11-year-old. I love him with every bit of me, but that made things a little more complicated. And for the longest time, I kind of just stuck to my guns and said, I'm going to stick around. I'm going to be part of this marriage, even though I didn't fit, I didn't belong. I knew I had to be there for him. And I think because of that, it went on almost too long. And it got to the point where I was utterly miserable, not because of anything that my spouse was doing, but because I was living a full character, if that makes any sense. And it got to the point that it was affecting my job. It was affecting my relationships outside of, not just outside of the marriage, but even my relationship with my child and my sanity and my health. And it took a lot of painful processing. And I had some incredible friends who stood by me and, even therapy, to get to the point where it was like, okay, I need to look at my health and I need to look at what's going to be best for not just me, but also what's going to be best for my son and my relationship with my son going forward. And if I stayed there, I knew it wasn't going to be healthy. It wasn't going to be good. And I knew he was already suffering because of that. So I left that relationship. I left that marriage. And oddly enough, since moving away and not being there physically, I've been able to be there more for my son because of it, which is kind of a weird thing to think about, mm-hmm. knowing that I'm actually not there physically in his life. I'm able to be there much more in the supportive sense, in the emotional sense. And when he and I are together, it's fully us and it's fun. I get to be the dad that I know I can be without the fear of, I still have to carry on this character or this charade, if that makes sense.
It does.
So that's kind of, one part of the story. I know we're jumping in with both feet right away, already in over our heads, but that's me. That's who we are.
So how did you meet, your spouse?
So we met at college. Again, growing up in a really conservative Christian home, the expectation mm-hmm. is that you go to a really conservative Christian school. And I had a list of air quotes approved schools that I could go to. Mm-hmm. One of them that came up, and they actually were recruiting me. They weren't on the list, but they were still part of that very, very conservative Christian education realm and world. I grew up in Maryland. I grew up there my whole life. My family's still out there. But this tiny little Nazarene school recruited me. And so I went to Olivet Nazarene University in Bourbonnais, Illinois. And that's where I met my ex. Okay. She was going there. She grew up in Illinois. It was very similar upbringing. But also very conservative, very, very, very traditional. And so we met freshman year there.
And so how long were you guys together before you got married?
2 years-ish.
What made you decide to get married at that time? I know it was an expectation of you, but like, why then, yeah. I guess?
I'm still in therapy about that. I'll be honest with you. I truly, deeply believed that one, if I stuck to my guns and I acted the way that I was supposed to act, mm-hmm. that at some point I wouldn't be broken anymore, because that's how I viewed myself, because that's what I had been told. And so there was this, I don't want to say, well, maybe desperation mm-hmm. to just go, nope, I'm in this for the long haul. I've got to be normal somehow. And it wasn't that I was actively going, hey, I have to act straight to fit in. It was, I have to act this way because if I don't, I'm broken. Mm-hmm. And when you grow up that way, that's what you hear your whole life, but you're also taught that way. And so you believe it about yourself, mm-hmm. right? You know, I definitely felt and fully believed that I was flawed, that I was sick, that I was broken, that every term that I've ever right. heard applied to me, I believed it about myself. Mm-hmm. And so whether subconsciously or consciously, it was like, no, this is just how life is going to be. This is my cross to bear, right? We hear that term all the time. Yeah. It's not always a good thing. And I don't want to get into the weeds on that, because I don't want to take somebody's beliefs or their core values away from them. But when you do grow up that way and you're taught one thing and you believe that one thing, but at the same time, your core self is going, well, this doesn't fit. This doesn't feel right. I feel like there's something wrong there. But again, everybody in my life had taught me one thing, going, okay, well then clearly if they all are saying this, then I'm the one at fault.
Right.
So I don't want to say I dragged the relationship on, but there was definitely a fear of commitment there. But also it was like, okay, there's inevitability. I just have to do this.
Right.
And so, yeah, we were together longer than that. We were dating for 2 years and then we had a year long engagement.
Okay.
So and I had also, what's that?
So a ring by spring?
December. Yeah. I don't know the rhyme for that, but yes. there was also, again, when you tell yourself one thing and you grow up believing one thing and you're convinced of one thing, at some point, I don't want to say the lie becomes truth, because I believe that I did love her. Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to fully love her, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. And I still very much regret that, because I put her through something that she shouldn't have had to go through. I regret a lot of things about that relationship. I am eternally grateful for the fact that I have a son. But I definitely wish that it could have happened a different way,
right,
without hurting her. Because I didn't need to put her through that. And I know that every relationship has its ups and downs. Every relationship has its hiccups. I just wish that I wasn't the hiccup in that relationship, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So did you guys have like a big traditional wedding then?
Yeah, very much so. Yes. I mean, really, it was big in the sense that I think I maybe had maybe a dozen people come on my side. Oh, wow. Everybody else was from her side. But my family is all on the East Coast. And so my immediate family came out for it. But in terms of extended family, aunts, uncles, and it's a big family, nobody really came out on that side. But yeah, it was very much a traditional wedding. It was very much a big wedding, big ordeal. It was a fun party, but it was still off, you know?
So what was, I guess, like the first year of marriage like?
Oddly enough, it was easy to slip into the cohabitation part of it. Okay. I'd always heard, oh, your first year is always the hardest. That wasn't the case. But I think a lot of times when people say the first year is the hardest, it's because you have to get used to a new routine and you have to get used to a new, you know, even something as little as like, how do you apply the toothpaste on your toothbrush? Right. Some people roll it. That's me. Some people crumple it. That was her. That can become a big fight for people. Oh. We just bought two tubes of toothpaste. So we didn't have those issues. Mm-hmm. I did my own laundry. She did hers. So there was still this separation from the very beginning. So the cohabitation part was easy, but there wasn't that immediate
intimacy,
if that makes sense. Yes, it was there because it was a requirement.
Not like, no, I mean like,
yeah.
So everybody assumes intimacy, they mean like the physical, but I mean like the intimacy of like the emotional intimacy. Do you think that was kind of what was off?
We were really close as friends.
Okay.
So from my limited experience, mm-hmm. we were doing all right. I had tried to have conversations even before we were dating, And then when we were dating and even after we were married, I tried to have those conversations like, hey, I'm broken. But that's the extent of the conversation because that was what I believed and that was what I had been taught. Mm-hmm. So what I would call the full reckoning of my sexuality, that didn't happen in those early years because it was still very much the place of this is wrong. So mm-hmm. it was more of a, those conversations were almost more of a confession, if that makes sense. Yeah. And because she was raised the same way, very conservative, very traditional, almost more so than I was, it was like, okay, but if we don't talk about it, if we don't think about it, then it's not an issue. Mm. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people are still in that stuck situation where they just go, okay, we're just not going to talk about this. So we're going to sweep it under the rug. We're going to act like it doesn't exist. And then years later, things crumble, yeah. you know, relationships, marriages, whatever it might be, because you can only go on lying to yourself for so long.
Right. So when do you think this reckoning of your sexuality, like what brought that on?
I knew very early on that I was not attracted to her sexually. Mm-hmm. But again, for me, it was always like, well, I'm the broken one. I'm the flawed one. So I just have to somehow fix it. And that didn't happen. And that continually didn't happen. There wasn't a light bulb moment.
Okay.
It was a progression of, really the way I think about it, it was a systematic unlearning of everything that I knew or thought I knew.
Okay.
Again, going back to my upbringing, when you're taught one thing from the moment you're born, it's very hard to unlearn that without feeling like you're somehow failing. And I still deal with that. I really do. I mean, I'm 36 mm-hmm. and I still sit back. And when I stop and think about it, I'm like, am I really doing this? Okay. And that's normal. It's okay to stop and question. It's okay to do that. I think when you stop questioning things, when you stop thinking about things, that's when your personal evolution stops. And that's dangerous because I always want to keep growing. I always want to keep learning. I always want to keep reckoning with myself. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't a light bulb moment for me to go, okay, I'm done. That's it. It was a very gradual progression. And in the relationship as well, there were a lot of things that weren't healthy and weren't good that just kind of added to that overall feeling of weight until it got to the point where I was like, if I don't get out of this situation, I was in a bad job. I was in a fake marriage, which I hate saying because to her, it was very real. Mm-hmm. But it got to the point that I was like, if I don't get out of this, I don't think I'm going to survive. And that was a mm-hmm. scary thought to go, yeah. if I don't survive, then my son absolutely doesn't have a father in his life. And in order to make sure that I'm there for him, I have to get out, even though it's going to hurt.
How did you have that tough conversation with her?
I really have tried not to put the blame on one person or the other. I mm-hmm. know I carry a lot of it, but in those moments, trying to have that conversation with someone who either refuses to listen or is incapable of listening, it just means that you have a conversation over and over and over again.
Is it okay to ask about how your family reacted?
Yeah.
Okay. So that would be my question. So how did your family react? Because I know you said your immediate family was at the wedding and everything, but then, you know, later on, mm-hmm. how did that go down?
I would say it's still going.
Okay.
I have two sisters. We got a mom, a dad, and then my dad remarried. Every single one of them is in a different place.
Okay.
And the way that it took me a long time, one, to come to terms with my sexuality and to be okay with that and to celebrate it and to just be who I am. Mm-hmm. It took an even longer time to realize that my coming out to them wasn't their right or their privilege. What I mean by that is we put a lot of emphasis on people coming out of the closet. Sometimes it's okay to be in the closet if coming out means that you're no longer safe or welcome. I won't say loved, because I know that I have my family's unconditional love, conditionally. But it's not somebody else's place to decide. So if I come out to Janelle and I say, "Hey, Janelle, I'm gay," it's not her position to pull me out of the closet. Mm-hmm. But if I haven't come out to Janelle, it's also not her place to know if I am or am I not. It doesn't matter. All that Janelle needs to know is that I'm human. And if I do or I don't come out to her, that's my decision. And so the coming out process with my family, I have been different and I have approached them differently for each one. Not because I'm trying to hide from them or there's something that I want to do differently, but I also know who they are and how they respond. Perfect example. When I was, I don't know, maybe 9 or 10 years old, I remember trying to have a conversation with my dad. And I remember asking him, "What does it mean to be gay?" And he said, "It means you're happy and we won't ever talk about this again." And that was very cut and dry for him. Mm-hmm. So I knew for him, it was a, "We don't talk about this," but it's also not even, it's not even a possibility. It's not even in his universe, if that makes sense. Right. For my mom, having the conversation with her, "I think I'm gay." Her response was, "No, you're sick. And I'll pray to Jesus to heal you." And that was it. And she still says that to this day. In fact, I remember at one point she actually told me she was praying that Jesus would make me sick so that I could see what was wrong. Which as a kid, I accepted it because it was my mom and I was terrified of getting sick. Like, oh my gosh, am I going to go to bed and wake up throwing up? Or, you know, am I going to have a, what is this going to look like? And while I didn't physically become sick, it added to the stress, and stress over time does make you sick. And I definitely experienced that. For her, it's very, very much deep rooted. I don't want to say spirituality, but it's very, very, very deep in the, you weren't made that way. And if you are that way, it's because you're sick. And so the conversations with her still typically end up that way. There's no convincing, there's no changing of mind. She knows it, I know it, we don't talk about it. So again, this goes back to the coming out of the closet isn't somebody else's right or isn't somebody else's privilege. It's mine.
Right.
If I get to tell you about who I am, that's me sharing. That is my privilege. I get to sit and I get to talk with Janelle and tell her about, you know, I flew a kite this past weekend and I told Janelle about it. So I shared that piece of me with her because I was excited about it and I wanted to share that with her. If I don't share it with her, it doesn't mean that we don't have that relationship. It just means I choose not to share that piece of me with her. Yeah. And so that's very much how I go about that relationship, especially with my mom. We just don't talk about that piece of me. You know, everybody jokes about when you get your family together and you sit at the Thanksgiving table or, you know, whatever your big meal traditionally is, there are things that are off topics, politics and religion. In my family, it is, politics are very much a go. My family is very political, not the same way I am. So they talk about that all the time. They talk about religion all the time. The things that we don't talk about, sexuality, things like that. That's the stuff that we don't talk about in my family. My sisters are very, my older sister is supportive in her own way. We don't talk about it, but she sends me a cup with a rainbow unicorn on it. Just says, this is a gift. And she says, it's from my nieces to me. And it is my favorite thing in the world because I know that my older sister actually is the one who bought it for me. And that's her way of supporting. My younger sister is I'm going to use the term balls to the walls. She just fully embraces it and goes, here we go. Let's do this. And she is the biggest supporter and ally you could think of. But every single one of my family members are different in the way that they either show support or handle that. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. It's an interesting way to put it. I never really thought of it like that. I guess I'm so used to the societal idea that you either are out or you're in the closet and there's like no in between. Mm-hmm. But what you're saying makes a lot more sense, where be out where it's safe to be out. Be as true to yourself as you can be always.
Yes. And I think, to climb on my soapbox for a minute, I think that the same way that we talk about body shaming and how we need to step away from that, mm-hmm. I think we need to stop shaming people who aren't ready to either come out of the closet or aren't able to. Because of that stigma, there are more people who are still in the closet because they're just utterly afraid to do it. And I think the more that we can learn to accept people where they are and who they are and how they are, the better we're going to be across the board. It doesn't matter if it's about sexuality or about race or about societal status. If we can learn to just accept people for who they are, where they are, without passing judgment, we're going to be in a better place.
Yeah. So one of the things that we've bonded on at work is us growing up really religious and pretty conservative religions. What are your thoughts on religion now?
Again, it's taken me a long time to unlearn a lot of the things that I was taught. Mm-hmm. One of them being that it was never explicitly taught that God is hateful, but that's what I grew up understanding and hearing. Even though all the Bible stories I was always told were, oh, God is love. He loves you. He loved you so much. He sent his son to die for you. It was always followed up with the fine print of, but he hates the gays. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up thinking, I don't understand how this works, because if he loves me, he loves me, but he hates people who are gay and who don't identify in this heteronormative society we're in. So where's the disconnect there? Mm-hmm. And again, anytime I questioned it, you know, I would try to talk about it with my parents, never really got that far. I remember talking to pastors and youth pastors and even other students when I was in youth group and at college. I remember talking about this sort of stuff, and the answer just always came back, well, we just don't question it. And so subconsciously, there was just this affirmation of, well, no, he hates. Now, I will say that when I became a parent, I did start getting a little more understanding of, I think, what the intent was in that. But the translation was lost. And what I mean by this is, I have a kid. I adore him. I love him to pieces. He still screws up and he does things that he shouldn't do. So there has to be some sort of boundary set for him. And there does have to be some sort of consequence, but it doesn't mean I hate him. Mm-hmm. I think, at least in my upbringing, that part of it was missed. So I just picked up on, he hates you. Mm-hmm. And I accepted that for a long time, for a very, very, very long time, which made it even harder to come to terms with my sexuality. Mm-hmm. Because again, there's this duality there going, okay, I know I'm gay, but I can't admit it because the second I admit it, I'm going to be admitting that he hates me. Yeah. I don't want to be hated. I'm to my core a people pleaser. I'm to my core somebody who will absolutely destroy myself to make somebody else happy. So I can't have this. So it took a long time to unlearn that. I would not say that I am a religious person. Mm-hmm. I would not say that I am a spiritual person, but I would say that I am someone, I do believe in God. I do believe that he is loving. I do believe that he made me as I am and how I'm supposed to be. And I'm learning to not just accept that, but to celebrate that fact too. And as I learn that, and as I grow into that, it actually really generates a lot of hope going, okay, this is good. I don't go to church all the time. I don't subscribe to the institutionalized religion that I was a part of for so long. Simply because I have seen firsthand the damage that it does. And very similarly to how I approach my sexuality, I look at my beliefs, my values as this is who I am, but I'm not in any way, shape, or form required to push that on somebody else.
Okay.
It's not my place to decide for you, Mo, or you, Janelle, or anybody else what to believe or how to act based on my personal values. My personal values dictate how I act. And I have to trust that if you're doing the same thing, we're going to get along. Mm-hmm. Until we don't. And then we'll figure that part out. but I think because there are so many people who hold so tightly to their values that in holding so tight to their values, they've forgotten to see the humanity behind what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what got us into some of the states that we're in right now. I don't want to be a part of that. So I don't know if that answers your question on where I stand.
It does. It does, actually.
The way that I look at it is if God loves people, then so should I. Period. No judgment. It's not my place. No requirements. It's not my place. I just have to be the person who shows them love.
I like that a lot. So, not going to lie, was shocked to hear that you are still legally married. Can we ask if there's plans to end that, or is that complicated? Oh,
yeah, it is complicated. It's always complicated. When you are dismantling a legal system, there's a lot of steps involved. There are a lot of things that are required in that. But I'm trying to be very intentional about it because there is an 11-year-old involved.
Okay.
My capacity to be hurt and to heal is a lot greater than his. Mm-hmm. And so I want to be very delicate with his heart, because as a father, it's my responsibility to be careful with his heart. That's just how it is. That's how I see my role as his dad. And so in the dismantling of all of that, I want to be delicate because I have gone through unlearning what I was taught. If someone came along and ripped that away from me without being delicate, without thought of me, I don't know how I would turn out. And so I want to be careful with him. I want to be really, really careful with how I treat this situation. When you're in a relationship and there are children involved, no matter what you do, they're going to think it's about them. Mm-hmm. And when that relationship is taken away from them, they're still going to think it's personal. And so I'm doing my very best to help him understand. I can't make him understand, but I want to help him understand that it has nothing to do with him. In fact, it's quite the opposite. But I'm also not going to put that pressure on him either.
Right.
I'm not going to go to him and say, hey, you're the reason that I'm still, you know, legally married. You're the reason I stayed as long as I did. I'm not going to do that because that would crush him as well. That's right. Unbearable pressure. So that's why I'm trying to be intentional about that.
Okay. Can we talk about you dating or not?
Well, I think that, I mean, those were some of the questions that you had sent me already saying, hey, what is your current status? I am dating. And it's a very different experience from, you know, God, almost 20 years ago. You know, I'm trying to be intentional about that as well.
Okay.
I've seen too many things that I have bulldozed or blazed or hurt in the past. And I am really good at hurting people. So I'm trying to be intentional about not hurting moving forward, if that makes sense. I'm trying to do that because I know that I've messed up relationships. And it's hard. I mean, any relationship is hard, mm-hmm. always. And sometimes it's, you know, the thought that I have is that relationships are even harder because I'm a part of them. So I want to do my best.
So, okay, go on.
Oh, I was going to say, how do you meet people? Do you do online or do you go out and meet people?
I think it's very different in the time that we live in, especially since COVID. Nobody does anything in person anymore. So everything's online, which is weird. You know, you don't have necessarily the opportunity to just go out and meet people and then go, okay, out of the lineup, here's who I want to keep talking to. We live in, I call it a microwave society where everything's instant. You know, you put your food in the microwave, you hit it for 30 seconds or a minute and you're done. I think a lot of times our societal expectations on dating are very much the same. You know, you open up a dating app and you swipe left or swipe right and you're done. So it is very different now. And I can't imagine what it's like for somebody to go, to feel the pressure to be in a relationship. And just think, well, I just have to keep swiping one way or another until I figure this out. That's almost more pressure than it used to be, where you would just go out and meet somebody and go, okay, here it is, you know? Yeah. So it is a very different, now in the gay culture, it's even more so. I mean, now you don't just have dating apps, you just have hookup apps. And that's what it is. I know it's that way in you know, straight culture too, but not nearly as much as it is in the LGBTQ+ world that I'm in.
What is the best date you were ever on?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know if I have an answer to that. And that's not because I haven't had one. It's because when I think of like an ideal or a best, most of the time they're this past Sunday, I went kite flying. My boyfriend and I went out, we flew kites. I taught him how to fly a kite and it was wonderful. It was amazing. It was so much fun. It was something that I grew up doing as a kid because I would go to the beach on the Atlantic and I would fly kites for hours and hours and just, I would live in that moment. And so being able to share that part of me, part of my childhood with somebody was magical and it was amazing. But it wasn't extravagant. It was just, we went to the beach. It was raining and I loved every second of it because we flew kites.
I like that.
It's still catered to you. That's the thing. Like best doesn't have to mean extravagant. It doesn't have to be a whole movie moment type of thing. If it's something that you truly enjoyed, that's what makes it the best.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and we sit here and we watch movies or we scroll through Instagram or TikTok or we listen to romance books on audio and we think this is what's expected of us. And then somewhere in the midst of all of that, we fall short and we think that we failed. But the reality is it doesn't have to be like that. That's an expectation that's set out by society, by a few that would be known as influencers, but it's not always the reality for people. And so mm-hmm. when you can set that aside, when you set that expectation aside and go, I don't have to fly to Belize to have a great time. I can literally go down the street to the park and I can sit and I can listen to the birds. I can, whatever it is that is your happy place, when yeah. you can do that and then share that with somebody, it's perfect. And it might not be perfect for somebody else, but it's perfect, you know? But you have to be able to set aside those expectations first, mm-hmm. you know, to go, oh, well, we didn't fly to some exotic place or the sun wasn't shining the whole time. It doesn't matter. It's still a good time.
So I'm going to ask the flip side of that. What's been your worst date?
Oh, where things just fall apart. I mean, anytime that you're in a relationship, things aren't going to work out all the time, right? I don't want to say like, you know, oh, doom and gloom on that, but you have to also be able to accept the fact that you're not going to get along all the time. And when you try to force that, it's even harder, right? So, you know, going out to eat and arguing the whole time, or worse, you go out to eat and then 5 minutes after sitting down, you're like, nope, we're not going to last. This isn't going to work. Got to get up and leave. And then the walk of shame out of the restaurant, telling your server, sorry, this isn't, you know, because they know what's going on. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, and again, it doesn't have to be this monumental blow up, but sometimes even those little things feel like the absolute worst. Just like those little things sometimes feel like the absolute best. That's life. We're on a roller coaster. So you gotta learn to live with the highs and the lows.
I don't like being on this roller coaster called life. There's too many twists and turns.
They can take me off anytime. Sometimes it is just too much. I'm like, no.
But I would say, what advice do you have for singles? I guess singles maybe looking to get into relationships.
Don't put so much pressure on yourself. Again, just like sometimes you have to set aside cultural expectations, sometimes you have to be willing to set aside your own. And I'm not saying lower the bar, mm-hmm. because I firmly believe that everybody at some point has lowered the bar on themselves and has suffered because of it. But I am saying, like, don't put so much pressure on yourself. You don't have to fix everything. You don't have to find everything. You don't have to make everything perfect. That's okay. It's when you start putting that pressure on yourself to go, oh, I have to date somebody, or I have to be in a relationship, or even deadlines. By the time I'm 40, I'm going to be this. When you start putting those expectations on yourself, whether you realize it or not, the pressure's on. Now you have to perform, right? Mm-hmm. And when you can learn to take that off and be in the moment and enjoy the company of somebody else that you might not even think is a possibility, I think it opens up so many other doors. Don't lower the bar on yourself, though. Don't say, oh, I have to settle for this, because that will get you into trouble as well. But it's okay to take that pressure off of yourself to figure it all out. I mean, I can talk to somebody who's in their 20s and they go, I'm just trying to figure this all out. 10 years later, they're 30 and they're going, well, I'm still trying to figure it all out. Listen, I got news for you. I talked to my parents and they're in their 70s and they're going, well, we're still trying to figure it all out. It's life. Everybody's trying to figure it all out. What it is just changes depending on your state of life and where you are. And that's okay. But when you put that pressure on yourself to go, oh, I have to do this, I think that's dangerous. I really, really do. Because you find yourself in situations that you don't want to be in. And you also have to realize that dating, being in a relationship, or even being single, it's not for everybody. You don't have to follow society's expectations or norms to be you. And that's what I've learned over time, is to go, okay, if I've unlearned everything that I thought I knew about who I was supposed to be, then I'm going to kind of keep going with that. And that's okay. I'm just going to be me. And if I'm in a relationship, great. I want to give it my all. If I'm not in a relationship, great. I want to give it my all. If I'm lonely in there, okay, maybe it's time to be in a relationship, or vice versa. But I don't want to put the expectation on myself. And that would be my advice for somebody else. Don't put the expectation on yourself for one way or another. Let it happen. Enjoy it. Even if you want to get off the roller coaster, figure out a way to enjoy it and go, okay, at least I'm buckled in. This is a good thing, right? But when you can remove that expectation, it really does. It opens up the ability to just enjoy the moment and be there.
You got any advice for people in relationships?
It's hard. And that's okay. Don't think that because it's hard, it's not for you. I think, again, just like we have these expectations of like, oh, well, the perfect relationship is going to look like this. It's not always true. It might not be perfect for you if it looks that way. You just have to sit down and go, okay, is it worth sticking it out? Is it hard because I'm not supposed to be here? Or is it hard because I'm supposed to learn something from it? And maybe it's both. Maybe I'm not supposed to be here, but I still have to learn something. Or maybe it's hard just because, listen, as a human being, I have a lot more growing to do. I have a lot more learning to do. And that's where I find myself all the time. I have so much more to learn, but it's going to be worth it. So I'm going to stick it out and see what happens.
You're just full of good advice. Sitting here just listening. I'm just like, wow, how do you come up with these things? That's awesome.
Look, I had to make it my
work. Just a lot of bumper stickers. I read a lot of bumper stickers.
So I would say, how do you handle conflict in relationships? Because you kind of just mentioned that, you know, relationships can get hard. And I know that it's due to sometimes conflicts arise, but how do you handle conflict?
Do you want the truth or do you want the right answer? Because the truth is I suck at conflict resolution. I really do. I suck at being in the moment and, my tendency is to avoid it, right? Because it's uncomfortable. And so if conflict is uncomfortable, I don't want to be there. But I also know that my comfort zone isn't a good metric for growth. Because you don't grow when you're in your comfort zone. And I mean, literally still in the middle of learning this and dealing with this and going through therapy for this and going, okay, well, I don't want to be uncomfortable, but I have to be. So what do I do? The right answer is to talk about it like grownups, but we forget that we're grownups all the time. And we revert to this childlike state where we throw a fit or we don't talk about it. And unfortunately, there is a lot of truth in the fact that I'm going to repeat what I see. And so for me growing up, I saw avoidance everywhere I looked. And it wasn't blatantly taught. My parents never sat down and said, hey, when you're dealing with something difficult, don't talk about it. They just modeled that behavior. Mm-hmm. And so my go-to is to repeat that behavior, to just don't talk about it, to just avoid it. And that's, you know, that's the same conflict resolution. You find that everywhere you look. It doesn't have to just be in a relationship. You talk about conflict resolution in your workplace. I mean, there are libraries of books that are written about this. Everybody's still trying to figure it out. Just like you have to figure out who you are, you have to figure out how you handle that the best way. And if that means, you know, you've got to take the time and invest in it and wrestle through it, you have to do that. But you also have to realize that not everybody is in the same place you are either, right? The way that I handle conflict is not the way that my partner would handle conflict. It's not the way that my boss would handle conflict, or my coworker, or the person I'm passing on the street who won't stop honking at me we all handle conflict differently, but you have to understand that not everybody handles it the same way. So when you can realize that, it almost, again, frees you up and allows you to go, okay, they're going to handle this differently. And it's not my place to tell them how to handle it. It's my place to work on the conflict that I'm dealing with. How do I relate to it? How do I handle it? How do I address it? What can I do? But also to understand where they're coming from. So if I'm speaking one conflict language and Janelle is speaking another conflict language, either we have to get some sort of translator involved, or I have to learn how to speak her language. It's not my place to force her to learn mine. I just have to work on learning hers. Mm-hmm. And hopefully at some point she's going to start picking up on mine, but that's, again, not my place to force. I just have to learn how to talk her language so that we can communicate. And that's the hard part. That's what takes the most time, because again, it would be so much easier if I could just put this in the microwave, hit a minute and be done with it. But that's not how it works.
That's true.
So would you ever marry again?
That's a dangerous question to ask. I honestly, if you ask me that right now, which you just happened to, my answer would be no. Only because I've been through it, and I've been through it in a very poor way. Mm-hmm. And so my experience with it, my understanding of it right now is extremely tainted, to the point that I project my own feelings and my own thoughts on other people's relationships. There was a period where I would see friends who were getting engaged and were getting married, and I would be so bitter about it. And in my head, I'm going, that's disgusting. Why would we even want to do that? Out loud, of course, I'm, you know, congratulations, I'm so happy for you, but I didn't feel that way at all. But that's because I was looking at it through my own lens. Mm-hmm. I'm still working through that, right? I'm still dealing with repercussions of how I failed that, but I'm not in a place where I would go, yeah, why not? Let's give it another shot. I know I'm not there. But I'm also not going to say I'm not going to be there, because I don't know that. Mm-hmm. You know, my hope is that I'm able to work through these things. My hope is that I could get to that point where I go, sure, if that's what's going to happen, that's what's going to happen. But right now, based on what I experienced and what I did, I can't comfortably say yes.
Okay. And another thing is, what's one of the, I guess, biggest lessons that you've learned from being married?
You have to learn how to stand up for yourself. That's the lesson that I'm learning, not just learned, but learning. Because I was in a relationship that wasn't healthy and I wasn't standing up for myself, it put me in a very, very, very dark place. You know, I remember having a conversation that I couldn't even see the light at the end of the tunnel anymore. Mm-hmm. Right. We always talk about like, okay, you can hope for the best, see the light at the end of the tunnel and you'll make it. Take it one day at a time, one step at a time, you'll get through it. That light will get bigger. I wasn't even seeing a light anymore. To me, it was more like the tunnel was just the barrel of a long gun. And the further I went, the darker it got. And I know that's really morbid to say, but that's what I felt like. And it wasn't until I learned that I had to stand up for myself, and I'm still learning that. It wasn't until I got to that point that I was able to go, oh, there actually is light here. But my situation isn't the same as everybody else's. So it's not universal advice to people in a relationship or to people in a marriage to go stand up for yourself. I'm not advocating to just get up, you know, raise your arms and start picketing, right? I don't want to do that, but I do think there needs to come a time where people start respecting themselves. And in that, you learn to either be in a much stronger relationship because you're both respecting yourselves individually, or you learn, if I'm going to truly respect myself, I have to step away from this. And that can be a really scary thing to come to as well. And I'm not advocating for people to just break it off immediately, just because that's where I am. Mm-hmm. But you do have to come to the terms where you go, okay, no, I love myself enough to take care of myself. And when you can respect yourself and when you can love yourself, you can actually respect others more and you can love each other's more because it's coming from a true you versus something that you're just putting on.
Mo said it earlier. You're just filled with such great advice, dude. Like, I love that about you. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad we met. Oh, thanks.
You know, so am I, Janelle. I really am. You're good people.
Well, Dan, first of all, I want to say thank you so much for accepting Janelle's invitation to be on our podcast. And like I mentioned earlier, you've had some very sound advice, but thank you for just opening up and sharing your story with us. But before we let you go, we have one last question that we ask all of our guests. And that question
is marriage worth it?
Yes, it is. Even if it's not for you, it's worth it. Because you might learn something in the process, or you might learn something about yourself.
All righty.
We have a yes. Dan, is there anything you would like to promote or share or anything like that?
Just be yourself. That's the promotion I have going on right now. Just be yourself. And let others be themselves. Whether it's in a relationship, whether it's in a marriage, whether it's in a family or a workplace. That's it.
Well, you heard it from our favorite sage. This has been Is Marriage Worth It? You can follow our podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Marriage Worth It. You can also email the podcast, marriageworthit@gmail.com. If you have any questions, concerns, guest ideas, and or dates, the DMs are open. Be careful. But they are open.
I'm Monique.
And I'm Janelle.
And this has been
Is Marriage Worth It?